think you can hear me from the back as well.
Yep.
I will keep continue with English. Yes, I need the slides. That's another thing. Okay, so this presentation is on another topic that's connected to the one that I talked about this morning. And this is the one in which there's more linguistics to me, and in which it's even more interesting for me to hear about your feedback. Your feedback today and in the lunch break was precious, but in this case it will be even more precious, because the basic idea that leads me to this sort of methodological reflection comes from linguistics straight away, directly. What I'm talking to you about this afternoon is the digital encoding of handwritten writing systems. So that's something that has to do with medieval manuscripts that we discussed earlier today with Alois Pixla. It's very important in medieval handwritten sources, but it's also important in any handwritten source, because when we write and take personal notes, we're using writing systems that are non-standard. And I think that we have an issue that comes straight from the reflection of Saussure and Jemslev, by the way. And I'm going to discuss this in a minute. And one of the methodological solutions is a table of signs. When I give a digital transcription of a manuscript, of a handwritten source, I should provide a table with all the graphemes that I identify in the witness. That's the concept. I discuss about possible implementations and how these implementations may be processed in a scholarly digital edition and become a functional component. In Italian, we say una parte integrante of the digital edition, not just documentation, but a component of the software. Okay, so this person. The very basic concept, I'm no linguist, but even I know that he talked about the relational nature of signs within a semiotic system. In a semiotic system, every sign is defined by the contrastive relationships with every other sign in the same system. And this applies to graphemes as well. As I said earlier today, a grapheme for me is the minimal unit of a system of graphical signs in a graphical semiotic system. Okay, imagine this is handwritten source A, I will say manuscript, handwritten source B, possibly of the same text, two witnesses of the same text. These are the signs, the graphemes, of manuscript A. As I said earlier, for me, grapheme S can be meant and represented by two different alpha beams, but the grapheme is the one that may create minimal couplets that has a distinctive value. And this is the semiotic graphematic system of manuscript B. For example, manuscript A only has two punctuation signs. This is all theoretical. It's oversimplifying, obviously. A full stop and a colon. But manuscript B has three punctuation signs, full stop, comma, and colon. Now, this is about Jemslev as well. La forma del contenuto, I guess, of this sign is larger. The area of meaning of this sign is larger than the area of meaning of the comma and the colon. Because in the cases in which this scribe uses comma, or column, all these cases are covered by the full stop here. So can you say, that's my question, can you say that this full stop sign is the same sign as this full stop? To me, not. But even on Latin script, which is, okay, if you have to think of the most standard writing system in the world, you would probably think of the Latin script, right? Because it's standardized in centuries, it's the basis of contemporary information, digital technologies, which are based on the American alphabet. However, even in the Latin writing system, even in contemporary writings, I'm thinking, for example, of Pirandello, right? You have different writing systems. In this manuscript, there's only an I. In this manuscript, there is a contrastive relationship between I and J. In this manuscript, there's only U, and that's very, very common for Latin text, even in contemporary print critical editions. There are many critical editions today of Cicero that only use U. That use a U-V distinction. Here there's a contrastive relationship between U and V. My question is this U the same sign as U? To me, obviously not. And that's the Saussure point. starting from. Imagine this manuscript has every noun written like this. This is very common. Machiavelli was written like this, and that's Italian. And that's also very common in the 16th century, even printed books in England. And this is every noun written differently. Okay. The way we encode graphemes from handwritten textual sources today is we just use Unicode. And that's all we do. I think this is an issue in our modeling, that words for Unicode is thought for contemporary text, not for historical text. Example. Imagine I have an algorithm that compares the two texts and makes the automatic collation, the comparison. That software will see the Unicode code point. The code point is the number, the code that Unicode uses to identify a character. And the software will say that this is code point 75, this is code point 76. Therefore, here there is a variant. These two signs are different. Are they really different? There is a way. They're not quite different. And especially, which is to me more important, is that the software will obviously tell me that this sign, 75, is the same sign as 75 here, which is absolutely not true in another sense. These are not quite the same, and these are not quite different. So a solution to this issue, has been given by the Tito Orlandi I mentioned today. He says we should provide, when we do a critical edition, digital scholarly edition, when we transcribe a manuscript source, a handwritten source, and he also talks about printed materials, because this issue is there even for Pirandello's editions. Pirandello wrote Calamaio with a J, for example. But in contemporary Burr editions, Garzanti edition, reading editions, you might have Calamaio.
Many German linguists at the end of the 19th, at the beginning of the 20th century, write with no capital for noun. Kleinschrift, and so you don't have the distinction between noun and verbs in the writing.
In German? Yeah, that's another example. Okay, so he says we should provide a table of signs by giving a complete list of the signs. The point is a complete list. I know you're thinking that the number of signs that you can identify in a manuscript is infinite, but not the number that you identify. If you're doing a digital transcription, you're identifying a number of characters that you're using. You decide whether you want to encode short S and long S, or you don't want to encode it, and then you have to be consistent. So there always is a number of signs that you're using that are the signs that you consider to be pertinent in that graphical system. That's your choice what you consider to be pertinent, but you have that list. And it's no more than 30, 40 signs, so it's not something that's undoable, that's hard to do. That should look like this. When I created my edition of Ursus Beneventanus again, I tried to implement this. Implementing informatics means that you really build a software that uses it. And I obviously turned to TEI, which is the standard, you know. And I went and I decided that I had to use a TEI way to declare my list, my table of signs. And I even went to the TEI International Annual Conference, which was in Rome, so it was easy for me. Rome is the closest place to Palermo. It's much closer than Cosenza, and much cheaper to get there. So I went to Rome to the International Conference and gave a talk about this. And I said, I proposed something that uses, for the TEI-minded people here, the character encoding element in the TEI header. And basically, so not many people staying there, most people didn't think that we had an issue there. I know that when I talked about Saussure, and that's why I got invited here today, but then I mentioned the most elementary, trivial aspect of Saussure, you were all like, okay, come on, we know this stuff. But most people don't think that we have an issue here in the first place. Second, during the lunch break, a number of engineers were moved by pity towards me, and pitied me. I said, okay, this poor guy, he needs an answer. And they told me that first, TI is not good for this. I mean, the TI philosophy that's in the guidelines is AU is AU. Just use Unicode. Do not redefine anything that's already defined in Unicode. And that's already written in the guidelines. Exactly in this chapter, in this module 5, if you want to read it. That's why they talk about non-standard characters and glyphs. You want to define only those glyphs that are not in Unicode. Otherwise, you shouldn't define them. Second, they explained to me that XML, which is the data model upon which currently TI is based, is built, TI does not impede you, forbids you to do so. TI is based, XML is based on Unicode. So everything that's already Unicode should not be redefined. So I shouldn't define my U or my V because a U is a U. So when I created my Ursus from Benevento edition, I implemented a new way to make the table signs. And obviously, because of Occam's principle by which you have to choose the simplest solution, I chose the simplest possible digital implementation of a table, even simpler than JSON, which is a CSV file. A CSV file is just a text file with separators, really, in rows. So I created a CSV file that looks like this, all right? And this is what it looks like. In this table, you have links to a number of images of the glyphs, all right? So to the allographs. So this grapheme here is E caudatum, which is an E with a tail, which means AE, like in Roma. Okay. So we have a nodes field, obviously. And, which is most important, we have a column in which each grapheme is identified by a Unicode character. It could well be a ASCII character. This is entirely arbitrary. This is like the ID in a database. If you're familiar with database tables, they have something that identifies them. So, for example, grapheme E caudatum, which looks like this, is actually identified by this Unicode character. You know why I chose this? Because it's easy to type. Because I'm using this in the transcription. So it's easy. You type it like this. It's easier. The point is, this must not look like that. This is the sign, the digital sign, whose meaning is the grapheme is an abstract concept. Okay, so this is a zoom. These four columns are actually processed by the addition. So these are the graphemes, E caudatum. This is the grapheme visualization, just to show it on screen. This is the type of the alphabeam, alphabetic. Okay, let's scroll this table a little bit. Many graphemes are alphabetic graphemes. This means that their meaning is an alphabetical letter. Some alphabeams are not alphabetic. Punctuation graphemes do not have an alphabetic meaning. The space is a grapheme, although it's not produced through ink, because it does create distinction. It does create minimal couplets. Some signs are abbreviation marks. They, as you see, the Unicode character used for the encoding is totally arbitrary. The reason why I chose 8 is that it's easy to type. These marks are combined with alphabetical graphemes to create abbreviations. And then there's another category of glyphs that I call brevigraph, which are individual signs, individual graphemes, meaning more than one alphabetical letter. This is what they look like. Sorry for the underlining. This is what they look like. This is how I encode them. As you see, sometimes there's no connection. Doesn't matter. I could have chosen 1, 2, 3. Okay, so this is a table of signs. You see that for those alphabemes that do have an alphabetical, for those graphemes that do have an alphabetical meaning, I am providing the standard alphabetical meaning. So I'm saying this grapheme E caudatum means two alphabetical letters, alphabemes. A, E. Grapheme D means alphabet D. The same goes with the... You see that the abbreviation marks, like the macron, does not have one standard alphabetical meaning. It depends on its combination with other graphemes. How are you doing? I know it's afternoon, we're all kind of tired. You look like... What? Okay, I'll give you... And I'm trying to be quick, so I don't know if it's the best choice to be quick about those things. Anyway, all this table is not just documentation. It's not just meant for the human to read it. It's mostly meant as a component of the edition. I built software in JavaScript that processes two files, the XML file with the transcription and the table of signs as input, and does something with that. So if you erased, canceled, you are hackers, right? You canceled the table of signs from the server, the addition wouldn't work. You wouldn't visualize anything. This is, so to speak, the syntagmatic axis. I know I'm walking on fire here, talking about paradigmatic and syntagmatic to linguists, but in my naive view, this is the syntagmatic axis. This is the paradigmatic axis of science, and they interact. So this is a software I built. This software inputs the transcription and replaces the grapheme ecaudatum with its visualization sign. So basically what it does, it looks at this, looks for that in the table of signs, graphematic table of signs. It finds it, it checks what the correspondence is in the terms of visualization, and visualizes this in the browser. This is the browser. This is what the reader reads. So I encode this, I visualize this. This is the simplest possible software, right? So it's not that complicated to visualize the stuff. My point is, if you start from intellectually sophisticated or intellectually stupid, you had to judge this, but anyway, complicated, you can always derive something simple. It's not hard to create something simpler for interoperability or visualization. This is function graph. Function alph does something a little bit more sophisticated, which is it inputs the transcription XML. It inputs the table of signs. And when it finds a grapheme, it looks for it in the graphemic table of signs, and it replaces it with its alphabetical meaning. So the software finds the ecaudatum sign, finds it in the table of signs, checks that A, E are the two alphabetical letters that this grapheme means, and in terms of visualization, it visualizes A, E. Do you remember that this was the alphabetical layer? So it starts from the one transcription, graphematic transcription, and produces the alphabetical layer. This is what I showed you earlier today, this morning. I have 3 minutes, and I'm almost done. I don't know if it was clear, but it was quick, at least, so the pain was quick. However, when a number of graphemes, okay, the actual TEI transcription is a little bit, markup is a little bit more complicated than this, but I simplified it. When three or a number of graphemes do not have their standard alphabetical meaning, because these three graphemes mean quoniam, they don't mean QM in terms of alphabetical letters, then I provide the alphabetical layer directly. So it's not derived, I just encode the alphabemes, I transcribe quoniam. So in this case, all that the software does is reading expansion and producing the alphabetical layer. So let's recapitulation. I think we have an issue when we are encoding pre-modern, or generally speaking, handwritten writing systems, because like Geoffrey Sampson says, writing systems are semiotic systems of their own, regardless of the phonetic aspect. I think we have this issue. A solution which is not mine, it comes from Tito Orlandi, is the table of signs. Oh, by the way, the idea of including the alphabetical standard meaning of graphemes is not an idea by Orlandi, and Orlandi does not endorse it. You know, like in politics, I am not endorsing this position. So he wants me to say this. I'm not convinced of this. One possible implementation of the table of signs, which is a concept that is not there in TEI and is not there in XML, because they don't think in Saussurean terms. One possible implementation is the one that I created, which is a table of signs in CSV format. It's processed by the digital edition. And that is what I had to say about this topic. Thank you.
Paolo, puoi mostrare ancora la foto del congresso di AI?
Sì.
Quella prima.
This is fundamentally linguistically wrong.
Ok.
Grazie Paolo. I fully support your approach, and I feel